space program. Could you give us any specifics on that?
His big thrust was to kill the Skylab program, which he was unsuccessful in doing.
Any others?
I could get the record here. There are a number of them, right?
Senator, your last stop, you said something about hoping that the debate with Mondale could be in sign language. Is that an issue at all between you and he?
I would hope not. Just suggested that. That'd be a good... Not offhand, no. I'm serious about it. I think it ought to be in sign language. There are a lot of deaf people in America who'd like to somebody to communicate with them, and there just seemed to me that might be something we could agree on.
Senator, do you think there are any inequities in the tax laws, and would you cite a few specific ones if you think there are, and how should they be?
I think the biggest inequity would be if we go through with Carter's proposal to raise tax for everybody above $14,000. Now, he runs around here talking about the tax reform and inequities. I've got to remind everybody here that the Democrats have controlled this Congress for 40 out of 44 years, and all during that time, the chairman of those committees have been Democrats. Now, I know that Carter's been jumping around. He's on the hook saying, well, Republicans are against tax reform. Well, that may be an out, but how does he explain his interview? There are some inequities. We passed a pretty good tax reform bill this year. It's now on the president's desk. We've increased the minimum tax. We've reduced some of the tax shelters. We've reduced some of the deferral benefits, some of the DISC benefits. It's a great big package, 1,300 and some pages. So, yes, there are inequities. There are always going to be inequities. You start dealing with millions and millions and millions of people in any program. But there'd be more inequities if Mr. Carter had his way and we raised the taxes on half the American families. And that's not the worst thing in that interview. The worst thing in that interview was this. We're going to treat all income the same. That's going to come as a surprise to businessmen and farmers and retired people who've had stock or held their property trying to get a capital gains treatment and find out they don't have that treatment anymore because Mr. Carter says, and I can almost quote his words in the Associated Press, we're going to treat all income the same. That's his words, not mine, not Mr. Ford's. So let's let him get off the hook himself.
You spend a lot of time attacking the Democrat in Congress, but in answer to this question about what your own proposals were for tax reform, you suggested that the Democrat Congress has apparently passed a bill that you're satisfied with. Is that right?
I don't know that I'm satisfied at all, but one of my measures was that picked up about $300 or $400 million in revenue was to modify the DISC proposal. That was happens to be a measure I co-sponsored with Senator Mondale. That's one of our tax reforms. But the whole thing, there's a lot of room for tax reform. But Mr. Carter's on the hook now. Let's let him get off the hook himself. President Ford's had his proposal before the Congress. Much of it was acted on. Secretary Simon was there to testify on the reforms. And, we've got reforms.
Senator, now that sex is vying with taxes as a campaign issue, have you given any thought to whether or not you should get into Governor Carter's Playboy interview?
I don't read Playboy and wouldn't be interviewed by them, so I haven't had a chance to read that. I've been so busy trying to figure out my income tax.
You look at the pictures, Senator.
No, I just what you tell me, Bob. I don't know.
Concerning the debates, why is President Ford standing pat on his decision not to allow audience reaction shots during the debates?
I'm not certain that's President Ford's decision. It was a negotiated thing, and as far as I know, it was mutually agreed upon.
Well, it won't be changed unless he or Carter says something about it.
Well, let's get Carter into it, too. Are you talking about Carter or Ford?
Let's talk about Ford.
Let's talk about both of them, because it takes two of them to rescind the agreement.
Carter's not here.
Let's take one more question if we can.
Senator, you're going to be going out to California later this year. Are you going to make any attempt to see former President Nixon while you're out there?
Didn't have that in mind. Not on our schedule.
Can we take another one about you said you had spoken on the telephone to Ronald Reagan. Any mention made of whether he'd join you while you're out there? Or?
I think if we can get together, we're going to get together. But he's going to be, I think, in this part of it, not Florida, but in the southern part of the United States campaigning.
Thank you very much.
Chris, I would not get into that. My endorsement probably wouldn't help either candidate. Andy Adams and Diane and others, I really appreciate this opportunity. I want to visit with you a little bit about a problem we're all concerned with. And I want to say at the outset that I don't feel that I'm a stranger to this group. I think I have some feeling for everyone in this room, not based on what did or did not happen to me, but because it has been a special interest of mine for a long, long time. And I really appreciate this opportunity. I think the issues of handicap and rehabilitation, I'd like to think they always concern me, but I want to be very honest, I don't really believe they did. And suddenly when you join the community, you have a little different attitude. And I can recall when I was 18 and 19 and 20, I may be back up to 19, my primary interest was how fast I could run and what I could do on the basketball court and whether I could catch the football. And that seemed to be the greatest ambition and goal in life. And then suddenly I became a member of another class where someone fed me and someone dressed me and someone turned me around. And I suddenly realized that there were not just Bob Dole, I'd have to confess that there was a lot of self-pity in those early days. I couldn't understand why that would happen to me, but I learned to understand that I was very fortunate. I was very fortunate, and as I've said and you've said, and of course you're experts in this field, and I feel a little embarrassed standing here to tell you about anything about what you need to know about. But we've all learned that it's the ability that counts and not the disability that counts. It's how we act and how we perform and how we conduct ourselves. And I guess I learned the hard way that we're all part of the mainstream of America. And sometimes it takes a shock to wake up a person or a group of persons. And that's one of the problems today. There's an attitude about handicaps, an attitude about disabilities. It's changing, but it's still out there. And I can say very honestly, as I stood there the night after the nomination, and I was standing there to make my acceptance speech and did make the acceptance speech, and President Ford came on, and I stood there, I think I felt somewhat like Barbara Jordan at the other convention, who said the greatest thing about the convention was the fact that she was there in a position of leadership. And she had come full cycle, and black Americans had come full cycle. And I would like to think that if I can be of any help, either symbolic, I don't want to be symbolic, but through real efforts, that when I stood there, I might have given hope to some one person or some group of persons who had some reservations about whether or not anyone with a handicap can succeed. Now, some might think that in politics, going to the top is not success. I mean, a lot of people have dim view about politics and politicians. But whatever our field may be, and I've heard the awards given the past 30 minutes, and they've been outstanding, a tribute to the American genius, a tribute to our willingness to persevere. And that's really what it's all about. And I know at the convention, when I asked that my speeches be signed, there were some saying, oh, don't do that. It's going to interfere with others who want to watch television. And on the other side of the coin, we're always the cynics who say, well, you're exploiting the deaf. Well, I don't feel that way. I feel that I'm a part of this great community of some 30 million Americans. And I hope to be able to do the same if I have my debate with Senator Mondale. I think we ought to communicate with all the American people and not shut part of them out. And when Peggy Pinder, an outstanding young blind lady from Iowa, seconded my nomination, some of the staff said, oh, don't do that. And I couldn't understand why. And maybe some of the cynics say, well, he's exploiting a handicap or the blind. Well, I'll take that criticism because I wasn't, because I believe in it, and I'm part of it in a different way. If you have a kidney gone, I have a kidney gone. If you have some other problems, I may have some other problems. But the point is that we're a part of the mainstream of America, and that's what it's all about. And I just hope, as I said in our little meeting a couple of weeks ago, if you can use me the next 6 weeks, use me. If he can use me the next 4 years, I'd like it better, but use me any way you can. Because whatever happens on November 2nd, I'm still going to be in the Senate of the United States till 1980. And I made my first speech when I came to the Senate Senators always prepare a long, long time for their maiden speech. Sometimes no one shows up but you. But you work hard. And I remember that day, I think Senator Cotton strolled onto the floor, and a couple others sort of strayed through the chamber. And it really wasn't all that earth-shaking. I was talking about the handicapped Americans. That was my first major speech on the Senate floor when I first came to the Senate. And I've made a speech each year on April 14th. That was the day I joined the community in 1945. Again, not seeking pity or publicity because we don't advertise it much. We like to pinpoint what we think, from a legislative standpoint, are the problems and things that need to be done. So I'm hopeful that in the next minute or two I can tell you my views. I believe I'm clear on the goals of rehabilitation. I don't believe we want to isolate the handicapped individual in welfare or artificial government job boxes. We don't want to get the individual into the mainstream of American life as fully as possible and as quickly as possible. That's our goal. We want to move them into the mainstream. As I said in our meeting a couple of weeks ago, you know, there are a lot of people out there who somehow are labeled handicapped or disabled or some other developmental disability or whatever it may be, who have an interest in government, some interest in politics, and certainly the right to become interested. And I won't ask for a show of hands, but I would guess in this group, it'd be a very high percentage be going to the polls on November 2nd. And I'm not suggesting you should vote for Bob Dole or Gerald Ford or Carter Mondale. I'm just suggesting that we are concerned and we are interested, not because we have some selfish interest in seeing this done or that done, because we're like every other American. We do want to get the individual trained and employed in the private sector in a lifelong career. We don't want to train a handicapped person for a temporary job that may be gone in a year or two. And I take some pride and some credit in the Republican platform this year, which I subscribed to, and getting what I thought was rather good language that indicated and stressed our commitment to the handicapped. Let me read it, just part of it. It's very short. Too often, the handicapped population of the nation, over 30 million men, women, and children, has been denied the rights taken for granted by other citizens. Time after time, the paths are closed to the handicapped in education, employment, transportation, health care, housing, recreation, insurance, polling booths, and due process of law. National involvement is necessary to correct discrimination in these areas. Individual incentive alone cannot do it. We view that as our national responsibility. And I believe that indicates an interest. It indicates, I hope, more than that. Now, there are some who may have differences with the administration. I did read, and I say it very seriously, the remarks by Congressman Udall, a friend of mine. We served in the House together for 8 years before I went to the Senate. But I believe the president has a record of getting people together and unifying our national effort. Last year, he launched the White House Conference on Handicapped Individuals in order to stimulate a national assessment of the problems facing individuals with disabilities and to develop courses of action to provide solutions to those problems. But the White House Conference is only one aspect, and only a very small aspect at that, of our commitment to the handicapped. We believe it is our responsibility to coordinate the programs of the Rehabilitation Services Administration, the Office of Education, the Veterans Administration, and other agencies. And our responsibility involves legislation like the Rehab Act of 1973, and I want you to know that I certainly support that act as amended, as does President Ford, and we intend to see this fully implemented. As you know, in April of this year, the President did sign the order requiring every agency of the federal government to take steps to prevent discrimination against the handicapped in federally assisted programs. It was a positive step, and it will have far-reaching consequences for the employment of disabled persons. That executive order is consistent with Section 504, the Affirmative Action Section, of the Voc Rehab Act of 1973. It requires, as you know, every employer receives federal funds to make the physical aspects of his plant or office suitable for handicapped persons within limits that would not impose any undue hardship on the employer. Section 504 is a Bill of Rights for America's handicapped, and I want to pause at this point to pay tribute to Congressman John Brademas and Senator Jennings Randolph, both Democrats, and there are many others in the Congress, as Jack knows and Andy knows and everyone in this room knows, Democrats and Republicans who have outstanding records. Now, don't misunderstand anything I say being any criticism, direct or indirect, veiled or unveiled, at anyone who's had an interest, as these men have had an interest, and they certainly deserve your support. But the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare is in the final stages of a wide-ranging public review of the regulations implementing Section 504. And President Ford and I believe, and strongly believe, that that should be completed as quickly as possible. Now, there are many things, as I've said earlier, I sort of rambled a while there, so I'm going to sort of skip over some of this, but I stand behind it for press purposes. Not a long way behind it. So the press can go back to sleep. Yeah, Chris. Yeah, Chris is clapping. Thank you. Yes. There are many things that contribute to the exclusion of handicapped people. There are barriers, architectural, transportation, and perhaps most important, as I said earlier, attitudinal barriers. There is the difficulty of expensive medical and rehab treatment. There is the problem of housing. There is the need for special education. And there is the difficulty of finding employment. But even here, we're making progress. In 1976, over $960 million was put directly into rehab service programs, and over 300,000 disabled people were rehabilitated into productive jobs. I think perhaps, as I said, my first speech in 1969 was with reference to a minority group, handicapped people. They've always suffered from discrimination and exclusion. And I said at that time, it may not be a problem of being excluded from the front of the bus, but as often as a problem of being excluded from even getting on the bus. And that's the problem many handicapped Americans had and still have. And barriers. And I've seen, and I'm certain, I'm not saying this for anyone's benefit here, but I've seen it, and I've witnessed it, and I've been disturbed by it. And you can be very hungry at noon, and you can be in a wheelchair, and you can roll up to the restaurant, and if there's a foot and a half curb, you might as well be in China. You're just that far away. And we're making some progress, but it's very slow. And I will take a little credit here, if you don't mind, before I leave. And I hope the president signs the tax bill, because in that tax bill, I proposed a provision to create a tax incentive for the removal of these physical barriers. And I proposed that amendment, and I say in all fairness that I was later joined in that amendment by Senator Mondale, who's my counterpart on the other side of the aisle. And that indicates, again, the strong bipartisan support. And neither of us knew at that time we were going to end up, well, we don't know where we're going to end up yet, but we're going to end up. I better say that over. Neither of us knew at that time where we were going to end up. Yeah, that's right. But it has been passed by the Congress. I think it will be signed by the president, and I believe if enacted, it will help us tear down some of these physical barriers. I think it's going to stimulate the removal of barriers that have kept handicapped people out of jobs and meaningful employment. It will encourage the removal of barriers that have kept handicapped people out of the stores and businesses where disabled people must go to enjoy this full participation in life that we talk about. It also helps the mobility. We've also had some experience in the housing field, and I'll say in conclusion, we've got to continue to improve housing available to the handicapped. We have released, this administration has released about $375 million in loans under the 1974 Housing Act to encourage construction and rehabilitation of housing for the elderly and handicapped. And just recently, the Department of Housing and Urban Development reported that 21,000 units for the elderly and handicapped can now be built or rehabilitated. And I would add that just recently I co-sponsored, and I'm not doing this for self-aggrandizement, I think perhaps to let you know that we have an interest. We were considering a Meals on Wheels program in the Nutrition Committee. Senator McGovern's a chairman, Senator Percy's a ranking Republican, Senator Kennedy's on that committee, and I'm on that committee. I succeeded, and the bill was introduced, and I co-sponsored. We added handicap to that program. There's still this tendency in the Congress and outside the Congress to forget about others in special need, and some of us fall in that category. So I just believe that the future is bright. Not certain about mine, but yours is bright. And I'll close by saying, as sincerely as I can, that I'm convinced that President Ford has a commitment. I know that I have a commitment. I know that I'll play a very important role in the next administration, if it's a Ford-Dole administration. And I just ask you to take a hard look at all of us, as I've said at every other group, and then make a judgment. Because what we decide and what you decide, really what you decide on November 2nd, will be very important. And again, I appreciate the courtesy, and I'm very honored to be here, and I thank you very much. Sincerely mean that. Thank you. You got it?
So very much for these lovely flowers. And let me just say that it's my view that there is no more important work than that in which you're engaged. And I certainly share my husband's concern and his desire to help in any way that I possibly can in the important work that you're undertaking. I had the great privilege of planning the first National Conference on Education of the Deaf back in 1966 in Colorado Springs. And I worked for a year and a half in education of the handicapped for HEW. So let me just thank you again for the lovely flowers, for the opportunity to say hello, and wish you all the best, the greatest success in the important work that lies ahead of you. Thank you.